Here's an easy way for you to publicize Issues Etc. at your church. Go to the promote page of our website, issuesetc.org, and you'll find a short paragraph to include in your weekly church bulletin. Help inform your fellow parishioners about Issues Etc. issuesetc.org. Click promote and copy and paste the text for your church secretary or pastor to include each week in the Sunday bulletin. We update this paragraph weekly. Go to the promote page of our website, issuesetc.org.
The court's decision in Planned Parenthood versus Casey reaffirmed the core holding of Roe. That is the precedent of the court and settled.
There's a clear belief that Jesus came and died and rose again, and that Scripture is revelation from God. And all those doctrines have been steadily eroded within the Episcopal Church.
This is one of the holiest and most moving moments of this entire General Convention for me.
Can priests, pastors, rabbis be sure that their preaching will not be prosecuted?
The First Amendment's right to organize, to preach against, to speak against any way of life or any person is left intact with this legislation.
If you took a broad view of American Christianity and you asked yourself the question, what characterizes American Christianity today? What will historians 25, 30, maybe even 100 years from now say about American Christianity in the very beginning of the 21st century? How will they describe it? What will be the major thought? What will be the major ideas and movements and influences in American Christianity from the historian's point of view? Some people are getting a little advanced work done on that. Christian Smith has said, if you look at today's youth, you will find people who think they're Christian but are in fact just deists, moral therapeutic deists. And what about the narcissism of American Christianity? And could you call it the mysticism or even the Gnosticism? We're going to talk about American Christianity here in the first hour of Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in on this Monday. It's the 20th of July. Shane Rosenthal joins us here for the first hour. Our call-in number for the next 2 hours, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943, or talkback at issuesetc.org. Talkback at issuesetc.org. In the second hour of the program, Wendy Wright will join us. She's president of Concerned Women for America. We'll talk with her about two issues, abortion, as it's covered as part of the health care reform bill. That concerns a lot of people. Also, the confirmation hearings of Judge Sonia Sotomayor. A little bit later in that second hour, Robert Lundy of the American Anglican Council will tell us what the Episcopalians did last week in their General Convention. And then we'll round off the second hour talking about Elijah, Old Testament prophet and saint remembered by the church on this day. Dr. Nathan Jastrom of Concordia University, Wisconsin, will be our guest. 1-877-623-6943. 877-623-MYIE, or talk back at issuesetc.org. Joining us here in the studio for our conversation on American Christianity, its ideas and influences, Shane Rosenthal. He's producer of the nationally syndicated radio program The White Horse Inn, a frequent contributor to Modern Reformation magazine, and board member of Providence Christian Academy, a classical school in St. Louis. Shane, thanks for coming in.
Todd, it's always a pleasure to be with you.
How do you think the historians will look at American Christianity at the beginning of the 21st century, 100 years from now? How do you think they'll describe it?
Well, that's a challenging question. I think, American Christianity at the end of the 20th century and the beginning of the 21st century is plagued with a lot of different influences. It's, you have the influence of popular culture. You have different strains of theology, such as you've got Pelagianism, Gnosticism, you led with in your break. You mentioned Christian Smith studies with his sociological research with American teenagers, and I think he diagnosed it really well by saying, "What is it, the core sort of functional belief of American teens, religious teens in this country, is moralistic therapeutic deism," and so deism, which was a part of our nation's founding, a lot of our founding fathers were deists, that has sort of never gone away, that God is sort of there. He's, you know, it's right there in our coins, right? In God we trust. But is it specifically the God of the Bible? And a lot of us in America, even those of us who attend church regularly, sort of have this view that God is there when we need him. But he's sort of remote from our lives day to day. And that's what Christian Smith picked up in his studies. 5-year study, 5,000 teens, they came up and they told him, here's what we believe. We believe that God wants us to be happy. He's there when we need him. Good people go to heaven. And he would ask specific questions to sort of follow it up. What do you believe specifically about Jesus? Who is Jesus? What did he do? And how does he relate to the Trinity? And they couldn't, they were very inarticulate about those kinds of answers.
Is it only inarticulate? I mean, there's a difference between someone who cannot articulate what it is they believe.
Well, they were very articulate about sexually transmitted diseases, about sports, about entertainment, and it did go beyond inability to articulate it. It went into they were ignorant about most of the Christian doctrines. He said what they expressed to me, even those who attended church regularly, weekly, was not Christianity. It was deism.
Do you, if that is a snapshot of 21st century Christian youth in America, and since the church has essentially catered to the youth for the last, I was going to say 30 years, but we're really going on 40 years now, that the church has been consciously catering toward the youth, saying we need to gear everything, teaching, preaching, song, worship, prayer, toward young people. Is it safe to say that what the youth are believing, probably their parents who've been going to the same churches, are believing?
Well, I mean, if you think about it, the people that this particular study researched, this was a national study of youth and religion project that Christian Smith was a part of. They are receiving the torch that someone is handing them, and he himself says in a couple of the times I've had the opportunity to interview him, he has said, "This is not to say this is only the youth's theology." This is something that is happening in American Christianity more generally. It's happening with it's the part of the air we breathe, the pastors, the youth pastors, and the parents. It's part of the general ethos. This is what we're handing to our children.
So what kind of preaching and teaching produces moralistic, therapeutic deists, and if we are to take Christian Smith's conclusion seriously, not Christians?
Well, the moralistic part, one of the things I do for the White Horse Inn fairly regularly is attend various conventions. Most recently, I was at the National Religious Broadcasters Conventions, and I went to, I would say, 50 people, ranging in ages from say 18 to 55, asking them, what is in your opinion, what's the gospel? How would you explain what Paul means by the doctrine of justification, et cetera? And I would say in that age range, maybe 75% were not really in the ballpark of what Paul meant by the doctrine of justification. And so if that vocabulary is missing, and this is one of the things that Christian Smith himself brings up, he says we need to pass on the language of faith, and that language sometimes includes big words that the Bible has, but we need to pass that on to our children. And so most American Christians are not sort of into that language, passing on the great terms, thinking theologically. And so what we have is a vacuum. If we don't have those terms, we have the vacuum of moralism, because that's our, you know, Adamic nature.
So if you could, I mean, you survey these kind of things, not technically survey, but you observe this on a regular basis. What vocabulary in particular has been brought in to substitute for the classical and the biblical language of things like justification, redemption, sanctification, all those terms that are thoroughly biblical and ought to be part of our vocabulary? What's the new substitutes?
Well, the old substitutes used to be one of the guys I've interviewed a couple of times was William Willimon, sort of a been there, done that liberal. You've probably had him on your program a couple of times.
I can't remember.
One of the books he wrote was Peculiar Speech, Preaching to the Baptized. He's a United Methodist bishop, but he's come to conservative conclusions, thinking that because he said, you know, it was a dead end, the whole translation model. We have to translate these big biblical words into things people can relate to. So instead of saying salvation, we want to say self-esteem. Instead of saying justification, we want to say, you know, that you're made well. Things like that, more relational, more psychological, et cetera. But he says, you know, when we did that, ultimately, things got lost in translation. And what's interesting is I've gone to pastors' conventions the last couple of years, and have asked this question to many youth pastors and pastors: what do you do? What would happen if I went to your church and asked a typical parishioner about the doctrine of justification? What kind of an answer would I get? Or, you know, atonement, some basic words that are presented in the New Testament. Most of them say, well, it would be all over the map because I don't use those words. We try and relate to them to where they're at. And where most of them are at is they're not interested in the vocabulary of the Christian faith. So they try to make things more relational. And one gentleman in particular, I said, well, but what about, isn't your job to prepare them to read the Bible? You know, what happens when they come to the doctrine of justification in the pages of Scripture? Shouldn't you prepare them to read their Bibles? And they say, well, they have Bible dictionaries. They can look it up if they want to.
We're talking with Shane Rosenthal. The influences and the ideas of American Christianity, we're talking about moralistic therapeutic deism, a little bit later narcissism and Gnosticism. What does it mean that the church has become our preaching, our prayer, our song, everything about the Christian faith in the United States, if you can even still call it the Christian faith, is so therapeutic? Why the language of being better, getting better, remaking, remodeling? Shane Rosenthal is our guest, producer of the nationally syndicated radio program, The White Horse Inn. You can join us, 1-877-623-6943, or talk back at issuesetc.org. I'm Todd Wilkin. Stay tuned. Come join us for a live broadcast of Issues Etc. from the National Lutherans for Life Conference. We'll be broadcasting live Friday afternoon, July the 24th, from the Doubletree Westport in St. Louis. Joining us will be Bobby Schindler, brother of Terry Schindler Schiavo. Issues Etc. live from the National Lutherans for Life Conference, Friday afternoon, July the 24th, at the Westport Doubletree in St. Louis. For more information, visit lutheransforlife.org.
Would you like to post your favorite Issues Etc. audio segments on your website or blog? Well, we've made it easy for you. Just go to the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, click the embed green logo, and copy and paste the embed code on your website or blog. It's just like posting a YouTube video. Embed Issues Etc. audio on your website or blog today. We love our on-demand listeners. Old theology, new technology. Issuesetc.org.
Talk radio for recovering evangelicals. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Dr. Rod Rosenblatt, co-host of the national radio show The White Horse Inn, on the uniqueness of Issues Etc.
Issues Etc. presents Jesus Christ and His saving work out of the text of the Bible. The teaching of Christ alone is the driving force of this program. It deals with the important issues of our time with carefully chosen guests and hosts who are knowledgeable in the scriptures, history, and their application. On Issues Etc., you will not hear pop evangelicalism, but confessional Lutheran theology fluently presented.
You can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by making a tax-deductible gift today. Donate online at issuesetc.org, or you can donate by check. Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. A voice in the wilderness of American evangelicalism, Issues Etc. Thanks for your support.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. Shane Rosenthal is our guest. We're talking about moralistic therapeutic deism, narcissism, and Gnosticism. All very popular ideas in American Christianity today. Well, coming up at the end of this week, or at least the end of this broadcast week, we're going to cap this week of broadcasting on Issues Etc. with a special event, our very first live remote after returning to the air. Friday afternoon from 3 to 5 at the Doubletree Westport Inn in St. Louis, we're going to be broadcasting live from the National Lutherans for Life Conference. One of our guests, they're the brother of Terry Schindler Schiavo, and we'll be talking with other great guests as we broadcast live from the National Lutherans for Life Conference Friday afternoon from 3 to 5 at the Doubletree Westport in St. Louis. If you're listening in the area, we encourage you to come out and see the live broadcast, and you can find out more by going to lutheransforlife.org, lutheransforlife.org. Shane, we've kind of danced around the term therapeutic, but it really is the best term. You watch Joel Osteen, and although he's got influences from kind of old-style word faith, name it, claim it, generally speaking, he's about feeling better about yourself, about thinking better about yourself, about, as he would put it, getting rid of bad habits, replacing them with good ones. What's going on here?
Well, I mean, essentially, it's therapy. This is something that you apply to your life to make you more whole, to make you a better person, becoming a better you, living your best life now. It's all about me right now, and it's about fixing my life. Well, the problem is, Christianity itself is a set of propositions that may or may not be true. According to Paul in 1 Corinthians 15, if Christ isn't risen, our faith is in vain. Well, this is a set of propositions about history and about a total, you know, if Jesus is God and if he proved it by raising himself from the dead, then he gets to tell us what the world is like. And this is propositional. First, you believe the gospel, and then it will have effects in your life. But the way it's being sold in a lot of American Christianity is it's merely a therapy. This is something that, try it, you'll like it. It's pragmatism. It's something to affect you.
I used to work with somebody who had spent years as a friend of Bill doing AA. And he would often say, you know, the 12 steps will keep you sober, but they're a really lousy religion. And I wonder whether or not turning Christianity into kind of personal therapy, we have substituted a really lousy religion for the robust, genuinely life-changing, but also not just changing life, but in fact replacing my life with a different kind of life, the life of Jesus Christ. If we replaced Christianity itself with this lousy religion.
Well, yeah, and I think that the best way to think about it is that what Joel Osteen, Joyce Meyer, and others are basically doing is a version of Law Light. The reason Joel Osteen has a lot of people in his, what you wouldn't call them pews, would you?
They're not pews. Tiered, multi-tiered
former Houston
auditorium.
Rockets auditorium.
Yeah.
The reason he has thousands coming every week is because he has a very popular message. And the law is by nature in our hearts. We like law. We're always looking for how-tos. We're looking for fix-its and solutions. And the problem is the gospel is offensive. And so when you start talking about Christian proclamation, you're going to offend some people. Jesus said as much. Well, if a Christian minister is faithful to his task, there will be an offensive part of his message, as Paul says. The offense of the cross is not to be avoided. But in contemporary popular American spirituality, like Joel Osteen and Joyce Meyer, et cetera, you have nothing but the law aspects, but it's not the law aspect of old-time Christianity where it was judgment. And the one movie that I think sticks out in my mind, I don't know if you've ever seen Pollyanna.
Yes.
Okay, so yeah. You had the preacher in that movie, Carl Malden, basically is long sermons. They actually lift some sections of Jonathan Edwards' Sinners in the Hands of an Angry God in that movie, and it goes on for 7 minutes, which is fascinating in and of itself that a Disney movie would do that. But people got sour stomach in that community because of his preaching. Pollyanna comes along and says, you know, there's a lot of passages in the Bible about love, and you should talk about those. And it's very simple, and it changes him, so now he's preaching all love. And I think what you've sort of seen that shift in American Christianity generally from the 1930s to the 1970s and 80s, where it's more less hellfire brimstone. Certainly, we don't talk a lot about hell, a lot about eternal judgment, but we do talk about love being nice And here are ways to be effective. Top 10 ways to relate to your wife better. Sermon series on marriage and relation. But it's still law, but it's law light. These are the things I need to do to fix my marriage to be happy. But it's not. This is not condemnatory law like it was in the past.
It's you can do it law.
It's you can do it law. And it's laws that are basically at the bottom level therapy.
Karen in Wyoming emails us with this. Thanks for addressing this great topic. Since the publication of Christian Smith's research findings, have you noticed any sort of changes in the youth subculture in the church? In other words, are there any quote-unquote youth movements or even the church at large listening to the findings of the research? How should the church respond practically to the findings of Christian Smith?
It's interesting. One of the things I'm doing at White Horse is I'm working on this documentary project that's taken me a lot longer than I planned. But one of the things I've been able to do is travel around the country here and there.
Is this one you were working on like 5 years ago?
Leave me alone.
Okay.
and so one of the things I was able to do a while ago is last year I was able to go to the Pacific Northwest and I interviewed Marva Dawn, a Lutheran lady. And she has written a number of books. She tells me in this interview that she was very much affected by Christian Smith's research. And so she took she was doing a series on the Apostles' Creed. And so she asked if the youth who were in a different class could come join her as they walk together through as a church to go through the Christian faith together. What do Christians believe in? Why do they believe it? So they came, they did it together. Then the youth group voted whether or not they would go to her study or back to the youth group. And they voted to go back to their youth group. She found out later that what was it they were studying that they wanted to do more than my study? And she found out that it was how can I get along better with my boyfriend when we break up, issues of relationship. And so she was frustrated about that because essentially that's what was most important. That was the felt need of the kids. But the church has a responsibility to pass on the Christian faith to the next generation, and she just thought it's not being done.
You and I both read a ton of books from evangelicals who have seen the ravages of this stuff over the last 30 to 40 years, who are sounding the clarion call. You've got Oz Guinness, you've got David Wells, you've got you name it. And every time I read one of these books, I think to myself, if only the leaders of my church body would just pick up one of these books and read them before they decide to take us in the direction and follow in the well-worn path of American evangelicalism down the exact same road. Do you think that the leadership of American Christianity, such as it is, sees where this stuff leads, how vacuous it ends up being, and how it really is in the end destructive to souls?
Well, I think David Wells sort of points out that there are within American evangelicalism, sort of three sort of branches. One branch is the sort of marketing driven mega church type, which is sort of classically evangelical in its theology, but it's sliding somewhat. And then you have the people who are moving towards emergent. They're reacting against that, the overly slick marketing. But of course, it winds up being a slick marketing group in a different direction. But then the other wing, he says, is sort of your Reformation group, people who are convicted Protestants from across the different spectrum of what that means theologically, but mostly focused on the solas. And I think that those who have that sort of Reformation core are noticing this more than others. That's why it's on Oz Guinness and a David Wells who are writing those kinds of critiques. But I did interview a megachurch pastor who was more in that megachurch camp. And he himself said, in fact, I was at their youth. This is a 20,000 member megachurch in Southern California. And the youth center had a skateboard park section, and it had lots of kids playing Xbox, people throwing footballs, playing ping pong. And this is on Sunday morning. And when it's time for the worship center, the worship event, it's basically what you and I would call Christian rock. And when it was time for the sermon, it was basically what you and I would think of as Comedy Central, but with a, sort of a Christian message of go do something, be involved. Not a whole lot of Christ in the message. So I talked to one of the representatives of the church afterwards, and he admitted that one of the problems they have as a megachurch is that many of the youth that leave the church wind up not being churched when they go away to college, because they don't find fun church. They just find church, boring church. And they weren't socialized. They weren't, they'd always been worshiping separately in fun church, rock and roll, Comedy Central fun church. And College Town didn't have that. And so they weren't being churched.
Sounds like they weren't being prepared to, what, put away childish things.
And I think that's one of the key pieces of wisdom that I've found out recently, that one of the biggest issues here is that we are not growing up. We want things fun and easy, and things that are challenging, learning theology, learning the language of faith, all this is challenging and it's hard work, but hard work itself has become sort of a difficult thing for us to pursue in a life of ease.
Shane Rosenthal is our guest. It's Monday afternoon, the 20th of July. When we come back, narcissism. It was years ago, they said, I don't know if they labeled themselves the me generation or whether or not they got labeled the me generation. They've grown up. They're still the me generation. And guess what? The next generation is two. When we talk, when we come back, we'll talk more with Shane Rosenthal about narcissism in American Christianity. But occasionally, I want to talk about me. I want to talk about me. We talk about your dreams and we talk about your schemes, your high school team and your moisturizer cream.
Ah, the sounds of rich liturgy and historic Christian worship. What a way to spend a Sunday morning. At Trinity Lutheran Church in Millstadt, Illinois, you'll find authentic Christianity as you hear the preaching of Christ crucified for the forgiveness of your sins. Come, join us Sunday mornings at 9 and Monday evenings at 7:30, and find out more about Trinity Lutheran Church, Millstadt, Illinois, at trinitymillstadt.org.
The leadership of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is proposing sweeping changes in structure and governance. These changes would further centralize power in the church's bureaucracy and decrease the voice of LCMS congregations and laity. Stay informed. Read the new broadcast transcripts on this subject. You'll find them at the top of the on-demand page at issuesetc.org. These transcripts are a must-read for every layperson and pastor in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Issuesetc.org. Click on demand.
It's not about you. It's about Jesus for you. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
The National Education Association, or NEA, is the largest teachers' union in the nation. In the past, they put their political weight behind abortion on demand. This also puts their support behind programs and organizations that promote abortion in public schools. So at their national convention this summer, there was an effort by pro-life teachers to get them to take a neutral stand on abortion. This would have stopped the NEA from spending money to promote abortion laws and this agenda in our nation's schools, but the effort failed. As if to show their true colors, the NEA's lead attorney publicly called the pro-lifers a name I can't say on this radio station. If you know pro-life teachers, urge them to drop their support of the NEA. It's an organization with an evil political agenda.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the state of American Christianity, moralistic therapeutic deism, in just a minute, narcissism. Shane Rosenthal is our guest. He's producer of the nationally syndicated radio program, The White Horse. And you'll find a link to The White Horse in under the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943. Our email address here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org. Ken in Orlando, Florida says, it seems the more the church is enamored of images, the more often it falls into apostasy. This happened in the Old Testament church when the misuse of images in the medieval church as well. Our culture is image rather than word based, and the church seems to have followed the culture. Do you think our infatuation with images, especially moving images and their emotional impact, has influenced our theology? Good question. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that there is a general sort of I don't want to say ethic, but there's a the New Testament certainly says faith comes by hearing. It doesn't mention faith comes by sight. In fact, the reason faith comes by hearing is because faith is something that's hoped for, not seen. And yet, on the opposite side of the spectrum, you have the Old Testament. In Genesis, Adam and Eve were they saw what was pleasing to the eye, and they wanted what they saw. You know, Eve took of the fruit that she saw because it was able to make her wise. And so I think there is a we are more easily tempted by sight, because sight is about what's happening right now. It's right in front of me, and I want it now. Whereas the ear can hear something about the future that is to come. I can hear about somebody and what he has done for me that I can't see. And so the gospel is not about what's in front of me now. What I want right now is a brand new car, and I want health and wealth and happiness, and all the things that I'm hearing on Joel Osteen, and he talks about the motion that he creates in the background so that people won't change that channel. But faith is about what's heard and what we hear in the gospel. So I think there's a it's best described in Neil Postman's "Amusing Ourselves to Death." It's a great text. But as you and I were talking in the break, a new book on the subject, Lover's Quarrel with the Evangelical Church by Warren Cole Smith, also does a good job of sort of diagnosing that.
Okay, let's talk about the narcissism of American Christianity. Where do you see this in evidence the most, kind of the narcissism here, the self-centeredness or self-obsessedness?
Well, after talking with an author recently, we interviewed Jean Twenge, author of The Narcissism Epidemic recently. Fascinating interview. She's a secular psychologist, University of San Diego. And so in describing Christianity in that it's affected by narcissism, I'm not thinking of narcissism personality disorder. It's a broader term, meaning there are narcissistic sensibilities in American Christianity. And what I mean by that is that generally American Christians think about their personal transformation as the gospel, rather than the gospel being the news about Jesus Christ, his death, burial, and resurrection. When I ask people, mostly at Christian conventions, what is the gospel, mostly I get their born-again experience. And that is it's a more self-centered answer about what the gospel is. The gospel does involve my personal transformation, because I do get personally transformed when I accept the gospel, but the gospel itself literally is about the act and the death, burial, and resurrection of Christ in history. That's what the gospel is, and it has effects on my life.
I've observed, or tried to put it this way, to counter the narcissism in American Christianity by just saying to people as often as I can, the most important event in your life didn't happen in your life. It happened 2,000 years ago.
Right.
And it has been brought forward into your life via the word and the sacraments, namely the life, suffering, death, and resurrection of Jesus Christ. And yet, Shane, almost everywhere I go, almost every pulpit is filled with the preaching of the Christian rather than the Christ.
Right.
And I hear Paul yelling from the third heaven, we do not preach ourselves, but Christ and him crucified, and ourselves as servants for Christ's sake. So what's happened? Why is it the Christian rather than the Christ?
Well, I think it's because we are our favorite subject. And we'll always get those people. Martin Luther talks about this in one of his the introduction to his Wittenberg addresses. You know, as a speaker, as a Bible teacher, you have to be aware of when people praise you for your sermons. You know, when people start praising me, I just want to stretch my ears out so they become as big as donkey ears, and I want to hang bells on them, because I love it. And what pastors and preachers today love to hear is I want more practical sermons. And that desire for practical sermons is, again, that love for law, light, that it gets practical. It's about me. And that's the way we read our Bibles generally. We're looking for the Bible's about me. What do I do? I'm going to go to the instruction manual and find out how to fix my life. It's about me. Rather than seeing the Bible as a book, an unfolding drama about who Christ is, what he came to do, what's the human problem, and how he fixes it as the second Adam.
So who is Jesus in narcissistic Christianity? What role does he play?
He's a supporting actor in their life, and they are what's central. they are the center of the universe. In fact, this is the language that we've gotten from people like John Dewey and the whole Copernican Revolution in American education. He actually uses that term, a Copernican Revolution, where the child is the center. And that's the child-centered curriculum that sort of unfolds from that time to the present day, which is one of the problems we have with our American public schools. But that's also affected American Christianity.
So Jesus becomes what? If not substitute savior and sovereign, if we could just use three S's, what is he then?
Well, he's coach. He is the one who shows us God's best. He's the supporting friend. I mean, that's the sort of the language people have. What a friend we have. He's there when you need him, like, you know, your best buddy, and all that is relational. Christianity is not a religion; it's a relationship. So you have this relationship with him as your coach, as your the one who helps you to live a better life. But there isn't that sense of the old terms of him as advocate, of him as the one who propitiates the wrath of God on our behalf, the one who is who gets our sin imputed to himself and gives us his righteousness. And those kinds of categories are sort of falling by the wayside.
Okay, so I've kind of front-loaded the question by asking who Jesus is, but maybe we should back up and ask, what's my problem in narcissistic therapeutic Christianity? What's my real problem, Shane?
My real problem, generally speaking, is that I am dysfunctional. It's not that I have offended a holy God in the sort of the therapeutic sense. I am dysfunctional, and especially in the more narcissistic side, the issue is, why am I not getting where I should be in my profession? And certainly, Jean Twenge, in her book *The Narcissism Epidemic*, she talks about the health, wealth, and prosperity message being very, very using the language of narcissistic sensibilities in its very sort of promotional brochures.
Let's talk about the Gnosticism, which is a very old term, a very ancient thing, and yet still for some reason prevailing in American Christianity in the 21st century. How would you define it for us?
Well, Gnosticism is that classic ancient church heresy that sort of never got out of the bloodstream, and it just kind of it's one of these infections that is always there in the bloodstream, but comes out in different phases. So sometimes the church is in remission, sometimes it has an outbreak and an epidemic. And right now, because of certain trends in American Christianity, we're dealing with an outbreak. And one of the reasons we know that is there's a strong emphasis on spirituality, on spirit over matter, on the right now rather than over history. History is not good. Matter is not good. So if you think about it, it's not the Gnostic sensibility that we have in our time right now. Sort of you lose the focus on the importance of history, cross, blood, liturgy, sacraments. What becomes more important are inner feelings, the heart. Religion is a matter of the heart and of interpersonal relationship, subjective experience, is sentimentalism. And that, I think the best way to describe it would be that the emphasis on the subjective rather than the objective. Objective categories of religion: Jesus is God, he redeems us all by his work on the cross, in history versus subjective experience of God right now in my heart.
Where does it stop being Christianity and simply degenerate into kind of naked existentialism?
Well, the key core or the main issue of Gnosticism in American culture is what their view of Scripture is. If you are so Gnostic to the point where you were going to say what matters right now is my experience with God, apart from the objective category of what God has revealed in his word, now you're on dangerous grounds. And this was an issue that a guy named J. Gresham Machen dealt with the liberals in the 20s, and he said basically this Gnostic approach to religion in the liberal churches turns into mysticism, because you wind up departing from the Word, and you wind up creating an idol in your own mind of who God is.
Shane Rosenthal is our guest. When we come back, 10 more minutes with him talking about moralistic therapeutic deism, narcissism, and Gnosticism in Christianity today. It's Monday afternoon, July the 20th. I'm Todd Wilkin, and this is Issues Etc.
Would you like to support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by making a regular, monthly, tax-deductible gift? We've made it easy for you to donate using automatic withdrawal. Simply fill out and mail the automatic billing authorization form under the donate page of our website, issuesetc.org. No more writing monthly checks or making monthly PayPal contributions. issuesetc.org. Click donate and fill out and mail the automatic withdrawal form. Thanks for your support.
Have you heard of the CLCC, the Confessional Lutherans for Christ's Commission? We're deeply involved in providing seminars to build up Christ's church with education and training for the laity. So far, we've held seminars on confessional topics at churches in Minnesota, Utah, Oregon, and Washington, and planning is underway to hold seminars in several other states coast to coast. Visit the CLCC.org. Check us out. Get on the mailing list, or better yet, join us. See how your church can host a seminar, too. Go to theclcc.org.
Putting Christ back into Christian radio, you're listening to Issues Etc.
We at NewReformationPress.com are committed to providing a hand-picked selection of books and teaching materials that educate, inform, and entertain while relentlessly focusing on the gospel. Discover our growing library of resources by Dr. Rod Rosenblatt of the White Horse Inn radio program, including his powerful address, The Gospel for Those Broken by the Church, or Bible in an Hour by Pastor Wade Butler. And be sure not to miss our selection of t-shirts, gifts, and artwork. NewReformationPress.com. Finally, Reformation theology made accessible.
Concordia Publishing House has a new devotional for men titled Blessed is the Man, A Man's Journey Through the Psalms. It's a great resource for individual and group Bible study. Browse before you buy at our homepage, issuesetc.org, or purchase Blessed is the Man by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. Blessed is the Man, A Man's Journey Through the Psalms, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July. Welcome back to Issues Etc. We're talking about Gnosticism and its 21st century variety in American Christianity. I'm Todd Wilkin. Shane Rosenthal is our guest. Well, in less than 2 weeks, we have more than 1,100 fans on the Issues Etc. fan page at Facebook. You can find out more about Issues Etc., join the other fans there, and get updates. Go to Facebook.com, search for Issues Etc., Facebook.com. Our email address this Monday afternoon, talkback@issuesetc.org. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Let's finish up with Gnosticism, and then you have some thoughts on a few more thoughts on kind of the preference-driven worship that prevails in American Christianity that I do want to get to. This notion that can historic Christianity survive a notion that what matters most is my subjective experience, what matters most is my quote-unquote personal relationship with Jesus Christ, and this is a Jesus disconnected from the external word, from anything in Scripture. He's the Jesus of my experience. Can Christianity survive that?
Well, that's sort of my concern with the research of Christian Smith, because basically what he has said over and over in the interviews that we've done with him and reading his research is that this is not Christianity. This is a different religion. These teens are not merely inarticulate. They are espousing a different view of who God is. And with Gnosticism, think of the golden calf episode. The Israelites had a particular view of God that they were comfortable with, and they took that idea and they formed a golden calf with it, that they were more comfortable with this. Moses comes down the mountain and he hears revelry. And this was a party that was going on. That's the way they were comfortable worshiping. But it wasn't the objective God that they were worshiping. It was their subjective experience, and they were enjoying themselves.
They were tired of this worship that amounted to God's on the mountain
giving
the law.
We don't want to be afraid of him.
And he's going to kill us if we touch the mountain. And there's a lot of lightning and smoke, and that's good for a while. But golly, it really wears on you. Let's have a little fun.
Right. And so classical Christianity has sort of resolved that scary lightning and thunder God by the reconciliation that we have on the cross. Nevertheless, we still find in Hebrews 12 that God is a consuming fire. We need to worship him with reverence and awe. And so worship, there are criteria in the New Testament for how we are to worship God, and it is not to be done however I feel in my heart, what I feel I want to do. There are criteria for us.
Okay, we were talking during the break and used a phrase, radio dial sensibilities. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're both radio guys, but what are you talking about there in particular as it applies to Sunday morning?
Well, one of the features of sort of your typical megachurch is everything is compartmentalized. You know, you have this age group, the 40s and 50s group, the 20-somethings, the 30-somethings. Saddleback in particular in Southern California has different styles of music that you can go to. You can go to a worship service that is Hawaiian. You can go to a 1950s bebop worship. You can go to the surfer kind of worship. You can, I mean, you name it. It's basically radio dial, and the people they listen whatever their preferences are. Their radio dial preferences. They can come with that preference, and they say, well, that's the way I would like to worship on Sunday. So we have a worship service for you. If you like island music, then bring your hula and come to worship, and we'll do a hula worship. And so that is basically what my comment to you was that. That is a way to really prohibit intergenerational worship because I don't have the same radio dial preferences as my parents or my grandparents. And so we don't end up singing together. We're not in worship together. They're in a different worshiping group. And we can't sort of have that lasting intergenerational community.
I'm wondering how long it is until someone with a bright idea says, look, what really is governing people's preferences, and music is a big part of this, is now iTunes. People don't listen to one style of music. They become eclectic. And I'm wondering how long it is, Shane, and as I speak the words, there's probably some church trying it out there that says, look, come into church, sit down, put in your earbuds. You program the songs you like. It'll be your worship. We're all here together. But we can't have one praise band playing six different styles, so you get to choose it. At some point, we'll lower the music, pastoral preach for a while. Then everyone goes back to their earbuds.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's interesting that, one of the reactions to the megachurch model, the overly market-oriented consumer-type church, is the emergent church. And they've actually sort of done some of that, not quite with that technological power where it's all with an iPod, but they do have the iPod playlist, if you will, kind of worship where it's on shuffle, and you have a song from a Gregorian chant next to Shine Jesus Shine, and it's all mixed up together, and it's across the spectrum without any sort of theological direction. It's just the whole church and everything's in there mixed up without any sort of sense, and they want to go beyond sort of American Christianity started with Billy Graham, and they want to reach into the past. But the problem with a lot of the emergence is that it's eclectic, and they are just like the megachurch group. They are fascinated with technology, and so you'll have and creative styles of worship. So you still have that marketing preference, but it's not a coffee shop. It's Starbucks. It's a little bit more cool and hip. And yet it's still demographic style worship.
We've talked about emergence before. Do you really think it is an enterprise that will have legs? Or do you think it's just a flash in the pan kind of semi-solution to what's wrong with classical liberalism and the vacuity of American evangelicalism?
We just interviewed on Whitehorse a gentleman who wrote a book called Deep Church, who has been a part of the emergent movement for years, a guy named Jim Belcher. And his take on it is that, especially in the backroom conversations that he has, he says a lot of the people that he's been talking with are now becoming afraid of using the term emergent or emerging because it's becoming highly associated with some of the radicals. So your Brian McLarens and your Tony Jones and your Doug Padgetts, who are really becoming theologically scary in many directions, to the point of denying some of the apostolic classical Christian categories. And so a lot of these guys are, though they themselves are committed to being missional and having a, you know, they have some emergent sensibilities, they are becoming very theologically aware and concerned that something's wrong with the movement.
Is there a way to rescue American Christianity from now almost 40 years of the therapeutic deism, the moralism, the Gnosticism, the narcissism?
There's always a way for the movement to come back, and that is to recover its roots. And the roots are in the texts of Holy Scripture. And Paul talks about it very clearly throughout his epistles, in particular the book of Galatians, in which he says he's ashamed that you've departed the gospel. And those who are preaching another gospel are not preaching any gospel at all. But he says, you know, I proclaim Christ among you, as almost as if I put him on a billboard. And that's what we have to get back to, is proclaiming Christ and getting rid of these false gospels. And the false gospels will always be among us. They were among the Galatian church in the first century, and they will be with us today. The problem today is that those who are selling the law light and the contrary gospels are selling millions of books and are packing stadiums full of people and are on television broadcasts, and they are drowning out the voice of the historic gospel.
Shane Rosenthal is producer of the nationally syndicated radio program, The White Horse Inn. He's a frequent contributor to Modern Reformation magazine, a board member of Providence Christian Academy, a classical school in St. Louis. Shane, thank you for coming in.
Todd, it's always a pleasure.
Folks, you can help support Issues Etc., Real Reformation Radio, by making a tax-deductible gift. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio and send it to LPR Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. The address again, LPR Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Nothing's changed. I mean, the influences that were outside the Christian church in paganism, floating around all over the place, they were as narcissistic as we are. They were as improve-your-life therapeutic, deistic, and moralistic as we are. The pagan influences that Paul deals with in the pages of the New Testament have just found their way within the walls of the church, but the solution remains the same. Paul says, I was determined to know nothing among you except Christ and him crucified. He understood in the end that the message he preached was distinguished from all of that, not in a different morality or different emphasis or a different balance of ideas, but in the person and work of Jesus Christ. And that what would finally be the watershed between paganism, be it in Paul's first century context or the paganism that's found its way into the church, what would finally be the watershed between paganism and genuine, authentic Christianity would be the message of the cross. An offensive message, a startling message, a message that is never popular, and a message that may not gain you the greatest audience out there, but it is the message that saves. Christ and him crucified for sinners. So that we don't look to people's felt needs, but to their greatest need, and we don't preach to the seekers or those who are looking for something new and something interesting to improve their lives. We preach to sinners, Christ for sinners. When we come back, Hour 2 of Issues, Etc., Wendy Wright will join us to talk about abortion coverage as part of healthcare reform. Stay tuned.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.